Welcome to Minnesota Matters. I'm Tasha Radel, and I'm joined by MNN's Bill Werner, Brent Palm, Ashley Walker, and Mike Grimm. We're going to delve into what's happening in the North Star State. If it matters in Minnesota, we've got it covered. This week, a new law aimed to help first-time home buyers in the state. U of M researchers have discovered a new species of wasps. The new Golden Gopher women's basketball coach is 2 months into her job. But first, the 2023 legislative session must end by Monday, and lawmakers are working at a frenetic pace with a lot of business still unfinished. MNN's Bill Werner is here with a report on what they got off their plates so far this week.
Tasha, Governor Tim Walz signed a major public safety bill with a number of controversial provisions that Republicans were not shy about pointing out when the Democrat-controlled House passed the final bill earlier this week.
To ram through this controversial bill with Second Amendment rights being just completely taken away from our law-abiding citizens is against our constitutional rights.
Delano Republican Joe McDonald is talking about expanded background checks on gun sales and transfers, plus a red flag law that would allow a court to take guns away from those judged a danger to themselves or others. But Democrat Maria Isa Perez Vega from St. Paul's West Side says,
so many students of mine that have had to been rushed into a closet because it's not a drill. Someone has a gun outside going inside the building. And then we're supposed to just click back and go back to class like it's normal.
Another controversial provision in the public safety legislation allows early release of some inmates if they successfully complete treatment for chemical dependency, mental illness, or other problems, or earn GED or college degrees. But North Branch Republican Ann New Brindley says those convicted of the worst crimes, first-degree murder and rape, could also gain early release.
My suggestion was that, you know what? People who commit these particularly heinous crimes should not be eligible for the new Get Out of Jail Free program.
Democrats say offenders will be rewarded with early release if they better themselves while in prison, which will also reduce their chances of reoffending. The largest component of the state budget, K-12 public schools, gets a $2.2 billion bump in state funding for a grand total of more than $23 billion over the next 2 years. That in a bill the Minnesota House and Senate both passed this week and sent to the governor for his signature. The general education formula for public schools gets a 4% increase this fiscal year, 6% the next. After that is indexed to inflation. Lakeshore Republican Krista Knutson says the bill falls short on addressing the tragedy that half of Minnesota children cannot read at grade level.
We need a strong, aggressive reading program in Minnesota based in the science of reading. No room for loopholes.
Edina Democrat Heather Edelson responds that bill absolutely makes sure kids can read.
$90 million over the next 4 years will go to make sure that our kids have access to literacy.
Republicans proposed nearly three times that much. And Albert Lee Representative Peggy Bennett says the K-12 education budget bill is soft on student discipline, something she says society cannot afford with all the criminal activity that's going on.
We shouldn't be regulating the suspensions, the exclusions, even isolating a child. That is important sometime to have that tool. It should be rare, but schools need that tool.
Democrat Adelson responded,
well, if kids are not in a classroom, they're not going to learn how to read.
And another of Democrats' signature initiatives, paid family and medical leave for nearly all Minnesota workers, cleared final votes in the Minnesota House and Senate this week and went to the governor. Republican Representative Pam Altendorf from Red Wing asked DFLers if they know what kind of a burden it will put on small businesses, such as daycares.
Maybe it only has two or three employees, and now they have to provide this leave. They have to.
Mendota Heights Democrat Ruth Richardson responded, small business assistance grants will be available, up to $6,000 per calendar year.
To hire temp workers or to increase the pay of current workers to cover a shift for another worker who takes paid leave.
Senator Liz Bolden, Democrat from Rochester, told the story of one family whose siblings did not have paid family leave.
While their mother was in a care facility dying, they tried to cobble their work schedules together so somebody could be there with her, but they couldn't. And so in the end, her mom died alone.
But Republicans warn that program's cost will force some of Minnesota's 500,000 small businesses to close their doors and employees will lose their jobs, they say. Brownsdale Republican Gene Dornick says business owners also have to support families.
They get sick and have to go to the hospital And plus, they're running a business and they're trying to provide opportunity and jobs for the people in the community.
But Democratic Representative Richardson says only one in four people have access to paid family and medical leave.
It shouldn't come down to luck. Any of us can be one serious condition, one accident away from financial devastation.
Democrats rolled out the final version of their tax plan just days before the end of the legislative session, Republicans immediately taking aim, saying one-time rebates are only a fraction of what Governor Tim Walz proposed, and state income tax on Social Security benefits is not fully eliminated, even though some Democrats campaigned on it. Republican Representative Greg Davids from Preston said,
"We hear from in press conferences and so forth, this is the biggest tax reduction in history. But we must also let the record reflect it's also the largest tax increase in history, too."
David's talking about proposed increases for vehicle license tabs, motor vehicle sales tax, state park fees, hunting and fishing licenses, a delivery fee, and a myriad of other taxes. Democratic Senator Ann Rest from New Hope points to significant tax relief for families and children, the renter's credit, property tax relief, and aid to tribal governments. However,
we also recognize that there are some of these investments that we're making. We need to be partners across the state in accepting responsibility for the benefits that we are bringing. And this is the picture you get for doing that.
You're going to get a little bit of a rebate, $260 rebate. But remember, that's going to be coupled with an immense amount of taxes, $2.1 billion worth of new taxes on your back. This is an outrage.
Senate Republican Minority Leader Mark Johnson. And this week, a bill legalizing recreational marijuana in Minnesota moving toward the governor's desk in these closing days of the 2023 session.
The day has finally arrived.
If you're so hell-bent on going over that cliff, fine, let's go over it.
Wilmer Representative Dave Baker, whose son died from an opioid overdose at the age of 25, a vocal opponent of legalizing recreational marijuana.
We've worked so hard to help people get out of addiction, and now we're just opening up the back door again.
But Bill's sponsor, Coon Rapids Democrat Zach Stevenson, says,
"In every single state, every single one that has legalized adult use cannabis or medicinal cannabis, opioid overdose deaths have decreased significantly, and those decreases have been durable."
Maple Grove Republican Kristen Robbins said, "Licensed dispensaries likely won't open for at least 18 months, and in the meantime, people can grow cannabis in their homes and possess enough for 2,700 joints."
We are creating the black market. We are not eliminating it.
Stevenson responds,
"If you look at the history of alcohol prohibition, there was a continuation of the illicit marketplace after prohibition ended for a time, but today no one buys alcohol from bootleggers, right? I mean, you go to the liquor store. We can do this with cannabis, too."
That's Representative Zach Stevenson. And here we go, Tasha, to the end of the legislative session.
Thanks, Bill. I know you've been extremely busy covering these important issues. I promise you can finally get some well-deserved rest come Tuesday. Well, hopefully. More Minnesota Matters after this.
So you see, son, good manners are very, very important. Someday, many years from now, when you're a grown-up, you'll be a man. And when you are, you should be a gentleman. Do you want me to go through it one more time?
Yes.
Yes, please.
Yes, please.
Exactly. Always say please, thank you, you're welcome, and excuse me. Sit up straight, hold doors open for ladies. If a door's shut, then knock first. Don't burp, don't swear, don't speak with a mouthful, don't reach across people's plates, keep your elbows off the table.
What table?
And don't interrupt. While we're at it, don't stare, don't use foul language, don't call people names, but do remember people's names. Always share your toys, play nice, and cover your mouth when you cough or sneeze. On the bus, give up your seat to anyone who has trouble standing. Bottom line, treat others the way you'd like to be treated. Got it?
Got it.
And stop picking your nose.
Most parenting is hard to do in just 2 minutes. But spending just 2 minutes twice a day making sure they brush their teeth is easier and could help save them from a lifetime of tooth pain. For fun 2-minute videos to watch while brushing, visit 2min2x.org. That's 2min2x.org. A message from the Partnership for Healthy Mouths, Healthy Lives, and the Ag Council.
Welcome back to Minnesota Matters. I'm Tasha Radel. One of the newly signed state laws aims to help thousands of Minnesotans purchase their first home. MNN's Brent Palm sits down with President of Minnesota Realtors to learn more about the pilot program.
Minnesota Association of Realtors President Emily Green, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Well, the legislature is winding up its business of the 2023 session this weekend. And one of the bills signed into law this week, I believe was the Omnibus Housing Finance Bill, included a program aimed at first-time homebuyers This is your territory, and I know you folks were involved in this process. Tell us a little bit about the First Generation Home Buyers Down Payment Assistance Fund.
Yes, so this was a top priority for Minnesota Realtors, and we were joined by the Homeownership Center and Twin Cities Habitat for Humanity, who supported and worked on this for several years. So this will provide down payment assistance for first-generation home buyers. So that's a buyer who has never owned a home and their parents didn't own a home.
Interesting. So not just a first-time home buyer, a first-generation home buyer. Bit of a difference.
A bit of a difference, but a huge difference when you look at the impact that home ownership has on personal wealth and finances, financial stability and wealth building. When there is home ownership in the family, the net worth of a homeowner versus a renter is substantial. It's substantially higher for homeowners. And we know that our first-time homebuyers, because there are always first-time homebuyers out there, but we know a lot of those first-time homebuyers are supported by generational ownership in real estate, where maybe their down payment is a loan from mom and dad, or a gift from another relative. And when you're a first-generation homebuyer, you don't have access to that those funds. And this will really, really help out a lot of buyers.
Okay. For example, if I am someone who is a first-generation homebuyer looking to buy a place and I don't have that much for a down payment, tell us a little bit about how this works. How would they get funding? Is it grants? Is it loans? How would they receive help under this pilot program?
Well, it is a pilot program, so there's a lot of the administrative details that have yet to be ironed out. But in general, you would qualify for this assistance up to 10% of the purchase price at a $35,000 cap, and that would be forgivable over 5 years of ownership. So if you lived in the home for 5 years, that money would be forgiven.
Wow, that's a lot better than a first-time home buyer loan. That's okay, and it looks like the legislature appropriated like $100 million to get this program going, so that sounds like it can help out a lot of folks in Minnesota.
Yes, it will help out not just the buyers that are able to access these funds, but it will also help out the seller when you have a buyer coming into the market and buying your house. So it might encourage some sellers to put their home on the market. One interesting thing that I'm noting out in the marketplace is that a lot of sellers feel that the market has turned a little bit, that it's not quite a great market for them, and that is absolutely not the case. It is, you know, every market is local, is different and local, so you definitely want to check in with your local area realtor. But overall, it is still an absolutely wonderful time to sell your house. There is a lot of buyer demand out there. So, you know, hopefully this will also encourage some sellers to say, you know what, this is a great time to pass the torch and move on to move up house or maybe downsizing, just right sizing is what a lot of people are doing right now. So it'll help those buyers and sellers. It'll also help the economy. A lot of studies have been done by the National Association of Realtors that show, you know, upwards of $100,000 is added into the economy with every home sale.
Okay, I know it's going to help some of those first-generation home buyers, but I am reading that we're really going to try to help out the racial homeownership gap in Minnesota, and they think this will help.
Absolutely. We have the fifth largest disparity gap in the country, and this will definitely help to close that gap. We believe that access to these funds can really help the home buyers who are struggling either with building up that down payment or affording a home, because it cannot just be used for the down payment. It can also be used as gap assistance, so bridging the gap between what a home buyer qualifies for and the purchase price of the home. So it can also be layered with other programs that are available. So we are, you know, just thrilled that this program is available to everyone, and really, really emphasizing the opportunity for households of color to access these funds and help close that disparity gap in Minnesota.
Okay, I know it's a pilot program, and you said not all the administrative stuff is done yet, but who would you go through? If you were somebody who wanted to participate in this program, who would you connect with, or where would you find more info?
Well, I think new info is going to be coming out frequently as it formulates, but I want to point you to the Home Ownership Center. That is a nonprofit organization, one of our partners on this. Their website is www.hocmn.org. And then, of course, you can always contact your local realtor and ask them for the latest news on the program.
Well, it sounds like a neat program, and hopefully we have success and it'll move forward.
Yes, we are just thrilled with this great win for the state of Minnesota.
MNN's Brent Palm visiting with Emily Green, president of Minnesota Realtors. Stay tuned. More Minnesota Matters coming up. Welcome back to Minnesota Matters. I'm Tasha Radel. Researchers at the U of M have discovered a new species of tiny parasitic wasp that might prove to be the solution to managing soybean gall midge, a recently emerged pest in Midwest soybean fields that can have devastating impacts on plant production. MNN's Ashley Walker talked to Assistant Professor Amelia Lindsay.
I see this press release. New species, a tiny parasitic wasp, and immediately I am like, this has got to be a bad thing, right?
So parasitic wasps or parasitoids are really, really common. They're just really small. We don't often see them. And they're super important in natural ecosystems because they are sort of controlling other populations of insects. And so almost every insect is going to have its own set of parasitoids that will attack it. So this is a really common feature of most ecosystems that have insects in them. And in the case of agriculture, if you have a pest that's causing damage to, you know, your crop, for example, being able to find these natural enemies of the pest can offer some control of that pest, you know, oftentimes without having to use chemical control, for example.
Right. So as I continued reading, because I was like, all right, let's look a little more into this. It says that it might prove beneficial to managing the soybean gall midge, which I'm assuming is one of the pests you're talking about that goes after our soybean fields.
Soybean gall midge is a relatively new pest in soybean in the Midwest. It was actually only formally described to science in 2019. So it really hasn't been very many years that A, we've known about this insect, and B, that it's been a problem. And so in the last, you know, 5 years or so, it's really started to spread in the Midwest. And the soybean gall midge is a very small type of fly, and the females will lay eggs in the cracks of the stem of the soybean plant. And so when those eggs hatch and you get little juvenile larval flies, they will eat inside of the stem, and that obviously is bad for the plant. It causes a number of problems, though, and so what we see on the outside is that the stem will have sort of these, like, darkened lesions. The larvae have eaten away at the plant to the point that it has cut off nutrient and water supply, and so oftentimes the plant will undergo, like, wilting or lodging. They'll fall over because the structure has been eaten away. And so it can have pretty big impacts on soybean yield when you have an infestation in your farm.
All right. So it's a pretty new problem. And then when did we discover the wasp that's kind of going against it?
Yeah, so that's the article that just came out. And so my graduate student, Gloria Miloto, she's co-advised between me and Dr. Robert Cook, who is our extension entomologist that focuses on soybean. Gloria went out into these fields in 2021, summer of 2021, and she collected a whole bunch of stems that we knew were infested with the gall midges. You could see the plants were not healthy. If you open them up, you can see all those larvae inside. And you just sort of wait, and you hold the plants in a container in the lab, and you wait for the adult insects to come out. And so she discovered that in addition to these midges, the pest, we were getting a bunch of these wasps, and we weren't able to identify what they were. We turned to some people who are experts in this particular group of wasps and related species. They had never seen it, and so we sort of did our homework checking the scientific literature, and it was very clear that this had not been described before. And so we then ended up going through the formal description process to declare this as a new species.
So because this new species is going to be so helpful against this new problem, it's kind of a pretty good thing. Is that what we're going to be turning to help soybean crops in the Midwest instead of pesticides? Or what does the future look like?
Sure. Yeah. So one of the reasons, I'll just preface with, you know, one of the reasons that we started to look for these so-called natural enemies of the pest is because a lot of the other control measures that you would typically use in soybean production were just not effective. And when, you know, one of the main reasons for that is that those midge larvae are inside the stem. So if you spray, for example, chemical on the plants, it doesn't actually reach the larvae. And so, you know, with soybean aphid, for example, there's like pyrethroids are commonly used. Those just don't seem to be effective in managing this insect because it's physically protected. And so that's why we sort of turn to like, okay, so what other sorts of avenues could we take? So right now, it's a lot of exploration. I think it's good news that we found this insect that looks like it could be attacking soybean gall midge. There's a little bit more groundwork that we're working on there, and some of the questions that we want to see or some of the questions that we want to answer are, you know, is this wasp only attacking soybean gall midge, or is it maybe going for more insects aside from soybean gall midge? And then we want to know, you know, where is this wasp? Is it just in this one field in Minnesota? Can you find it more broadly across the Midwest? And then, of course, we want to know, you know, what sort of potential is there for this to have a significant impact on those midge populations? And so that's some ongoing work right now. And then in parallel, we're looking at, you know, are there other natural enemies? And so we have a student in the lab who has found some predatory insects like beetles that could also help. So potentially this is an avenue where we could use sort of a multimodal approach here, maybe multiple natural enemies. Sometimes you can change just field practices and farming practices to encourage more natural enemies. So, you know, whether or not you till the soil, for example. So at this point, it's pretty early, but I think it's promising that we at least have some good candidates for those that could provide control. And we just need to figure out, you know, how do we optimize that?
MNN's Ashley Walker and Amelia Lindsay, an assistant professor at the University of Minnesota. Time for one last break. More Minnesota Matters in 60 seconds.
Last night we put on an epic light show.
Yeah, we did.
The crowd loved us. We love the crowd.
Wait, but there were only four people out there.
Yeah, but did you see their four faces? All eight of their eyes lit up brighter than ours. And we're fireflies.
Yeah, we are.
Hey, that one girl, she looked like she'd never seen glow in the dark like this before, and we invented glow in the dark.
Yeah, we invented it.
And we're going to be out here every night rocking out our light show at a forest near you.
Woo-hoo!
So come check us out.
Check us out.
And bring your kid all ages show. Oh, but don't bring any of those glass jars because they make us kind of nervous.
Yeah, and I'm super claustrophobic.
Whether you're rocking their world or they're rocking yours, some memories never fade. Come alive with the forest. Visit discovertheforest.org to find a forest near you and discover other cool things to do when you go, like fishing, biking, or even camping. Visit discovertheforest.org.
See you later.
Yeah, see you soon.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ag Council.
Welcome back to Minnesota Matters. I'm Tasha Radel. New Golden Gopher women's basketball coach Dawn Plitzer-White is 2 months into her new job. She joined MNN Sports Director Mike Rimm to talk about the foundation she is building within the program.
Every moment matters. The next phrase I would use is the way you do anything is the way you do everything. And that's really how our program is at its best, is that when we focus on the most minor details, and we keep stacking those, the aggregate of marginal gain, we keep getting a little bit better in certain areas or a lot of areas, then all of a sudden, boom, it seems like, wow, this just happened. It didn't just happen. It was very intentional. And so those are a couple of the ways I think we would describe what our philosophy is.
And then in terms, as we go deeper into that now, how you coach your team, how demanding is it? Like, well, there'll be times where a player might be like, man, holy cow, this is hard, but it's worth it because at the end, you're making them a better player. Or I guess I'm saying, will you be considered a player's coach, or are you more of like this old school, we're going to just work you, or a combo in there?
I would say it's a little bit different than that. I would probably analyze it this way, in that I grew up, I thought I was going to go to college to be a kindergarten teacher. Then I decided I was going to move into the math and science world, and I was going to be a math teacher. And then I got into theoretical math, and I said, I don't even understand this. So let's just stay with real math. I don't need to explain why.
Yeah.
Just want to solve the problems. So then I moved to biology. You know, so when players come in and they say, I really want to major in this, I'm like, okay, we'll see if that's exactly where you end up. But or if that's really the job, the field you get into when it's all said and done anyway. But in my mind, there's an analytics behind a lot of it. And so I think one of the things that our staff really strives to do is teach our players why we're doing what we're doing. And then I'll ask them a question. The question is, how many timeouts do we get in the game? How many timeouts do we get to call? And they just say, I don't really know. Is it three? Is it four?
Yeah, I bet they don't.
Most players don't, because they don't really call timeouts all that often. In the women's game, we don't have the use or lose a timeout in the first half anymore. We can save our timeouts and then advance the ball in the last minute of the game. And so we try to get to the last minute of the game, ideally with three timeouts in our pocket, to hold on to that. So what does that mean? That means maybe we're calling one timeout a game. So then what has to happen? Then our players, there's a lot of stuff that goes on during the course of the game that our players have to know how to make adjustments to on their own. And so what we try to do is help them learn why we're doing it and then how to problem solve. So we can coach them from the sideline, but the reality is they know how to fix things and change things and alter things and adjust accordingly and how to attack in a little bit different way or how is the other team attacking and how do we counter that so that they can actually make adjustments during the course of the game. So it's more of teaching them how to coach themselves in a lot of ways.
And are your teams typically when you'd watch them, and I know you're a former point guard, do you usually have like a point guard who's a coach on the floor too, or is that when you've had success? Or I mean, obviously you'd love all five of them or 10 or how many you're playing to really have that instinct, but does it help to have one or two that really you can count on to know what to do and win?
Well, absolutely it does. And those are your performance leaders.
Yep.
And so within our program, we'll have a number of different leaders. And so you have your performance leaders on the court. And those are players that their teammates really look to them to be the ones to have the voice to when you huddle at a free throw, you know, and you're talking, who has the knowledge base and who knows what should be said at that point in time? And have they been trained? Have we helped them understand what could take place in that huddle to actually make it be a meaningful time when we're together? You know, and when we get done with our timeouts and they go out on the court, there's a time that they typically huddle and they have their own little fun and they have their what's being said during those times or how are they changing? How are they fixing things on the court? So absolutely. But it's interesting because over the course of time, we've had sometimes those are point guards and sometimes those are post players.
Sure.
So it really depends on the dynamics within your team. And honestly, that's going to be really important for us this year because we'll be a very young team. We have some experienced players, but we don't necessarily have a lot of upperclassmen. And that's okay. That's so then we just need to have we need to figure out who exactly will be that voice.
That's new Gopher women's basketball coach Don Plitzowite with MNN Sports Director Mike Grimm. That's going to do it for this week's edition of Minnesota Matters. Be sure to join us again next week on this MNN affiliate station, same time, same place. Have a great week. Until next time, I'm Tasha Radel.